Well, welcome to the Tater Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host, and I want to make an announcement. I mentioned it earlier in the show. I want to get the details right. There is going to be a Zoom conference, so whatever you call it, or a webinar, on a panel discussion of the arrest of Meng Wanzhou and the new Cold War on China, and that will be on Monday, March the 1st at 7 p.m. It's organized by the Cross Canada Campaign to Free Meng Wanzhou, and registration information can be found at the Facebook page or website of the Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War, that is hcsw.ca. And there will be simultaneous translation into French and Mandarin. And again, this is the Tater Report, CIUT, and we're really happy. We're going to be talking to Yves Engler about the developments in Haiti, and starting with the fact that a group of Canadian academics and artists and others who are concerned about Haiti have are circulating or and made available a statement calling on the Canadian government to change its policies, basically. Yves, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
I clumsily stated that. I should ask you, what is this initiative, and what is I understand it's maybe already been delivered to the Canadian government. If you could give us the background.
Yeah, it's a public letter launched by the Canadian Foreign Policy Institute, and it's calling on the Canadian government to end its support for the dictatorship in Haiti. And it was launched on Friday. Quite a few prominent individuals, people like Noam Chomsky, Roger Waters from Pink Floyd fame, David Suzuki, Naomi Klein, many people, a number of MPs, two sitting MPs, Paul Manley and Lee Ghazan, a number of people from the Haitian community, people like George Eliot Clark, poet, signed on to the statement. And it's basically an act of solidarity with the movement in Haiti that's protesting the dictatorship. On Sunday of last week, February 14th, there was about 100,000 people that protested in Port-au-Prince against this dictatorship. And the public letter is really kind of comes out of, it was organized quite quickly in like 3 or 4 days. It comes out of sort of, anger at Canadian policy and support for the movement in Haiti. And it was delivered on Friday. It was delivered at a rally organized by Solidarité Québec Haïti here in Montreal to the new foreign affairs minister, Marc Garneau. And we had about 30 people in front of Marc Garneau's office, and his political attaché did, they locked the building down, but he did come out to take the public letter. So it has been formally been delivered to the government, and it was published in Le Devoir newspaper. So it was kind of a bit of a media success, at least here in Quebec and within the Haitian community and you know, Haitian media more generally.
And again, we're speaking to Yves Engler. By the way, Yves Engler, you've written a book that was published in 2005, it has to do with really something that's not talked about, understood enough. That Canada has a major role in Haiti, and that was documented in your book. I find it surprising, and I noticed this petition, I'm going to call it that, alludes to the fact that Canada seems very cold-blooded when it discusses Haiti. Here we have headlines. We see these huge demonstrations. We see a lot of violence on the part of the Haitian authorities. Canada seems, the leaders seem quite comfortable with the leadership of Haiti.
Well, they're not just comfortable. I mean, they played a role in putting him into place. And you know, when it comes to the violence, you see, you know, the only reason Jovenel Moïse is president is because the Haitian police are repressing demonstrations against his rule, and the Haitian police are financed, trained, politically justified by Canadian officials. Just 3 weeks, about 3 months ago, Moïse put Léon Charles to head up the Haitian police. Léon Charles was in charge of the police for the 17 months after the US, France, and Canada overthrew the elected government in 2004. At the time, he referred to the war, his word, that they were waging against the poor neighborhoods that supported the elected, ousted president, Aristide. So the Jovenel Moïse puts Léon Charles to head up the police, and clear sign that he's going to, you know, even further deepen his dictatorship. And you have the Canadian ambassador meeting with Léon Charles about 3 weeks ago, and talking about reinforcing the Haitian police. At the same time, you'll find that when Canadian ambassadors ask directly about acts of political repression by the Haitian police, all of a sudden he doesn't have much information about the issue, and he can't respond. He'll just speak in general terms that police should be respectful or something like that, but won't talk about specific instances he's asked of repression. So the Canadian government is right there with Jovenel Moïse in his dictatorship. Basically, the newest phase of this is that the limited constitutional legitimacy that Jovenel Moïse had, it ended on February 7th of this month. His mandate, the Haitian Constitution says, the president has 5 years, but it's based upon when the whole election cycle works, and all of the constitutional authorities within Haiti, judicial structures, have all said his mandate ended February 7th. Now, his mandate from the get-go was of questionable legitimacy. The elections that he supposedly won, very questionable, less than 600,000 votes that officially that he received in a country of 11 million people. So already his mandate was, you know, questionable, but whatever legitimacy he had, it ended on February 7th. And he's just trying to extend it a minimum of another year. He's planning on rewriting the constitution. He set up this new, during this dubious phase that in April, he's talking about rewriting the constitution, which would give more power to the presidency. He's setting up this new intelligence agency that gives all this power to these anonymous officers, kind of akin to the Tonton Macoute of the famous, infamous Duvalier dictatorship. Setting up, the Electoral Council, he pushed out the whole Electoral Council. So there's no chance of having anything in the vicinity of legitimate elections under Moïse. So you have all these steps in the direction of full throttle dictatorship, and you have the Canadian government just going along with the process to the point where on February 12th, new Foreign Minister Marc Garneau had a meeting with Moïse's de facto Foreign Affairs Minister, Claude Joseph. Again, Moïse has been ruling by decree for more than a year, so the government that's supposed to be okayed by Parliament has never been okayed, so it's just basically a de facto government. And Canada's going along as if this is just a legitimate process. So basically, you have a president that if you trace the roots of the current president, it's after the earthquake of 2010. There was an election. The official that was in second place, the Clintons decided that the person who was in second place shouldn't be in second place in the presidential runoff, and that Michel Martelly should be in second place. Michel Martelly is the person who chose Jovenel Moïse, and they basically organized to put their person in place with Canada fully behind this, the Harper government at the time, fully behind the Clintons. Hillary Clinton even went down to Haiti to basically force this organization, American States Electoral Intervention. And so you have a president, again, it's his constitutional legitimacy was very weak. Throughout his mandate, there's been massive protests, and now you have almost no constitutional legitimacy, but you have Canada backing the president up. And really, after the US, Canada is the second power in Haiti, right? It's clear. It's no longer France. Historically, it has been. It's no longer France. Now it is Canada. Canada's hands are all over Haitian politics, And it's about supporting the 10 families that, you know, run the economy and basically undermining democracy, undermining sovereignty.
Yeah. We're speaking to Eve Engler, I would suggest go to eveengler.com. You have a new article, actually, at eveengler.com, where you're talking about some of the evidence of the corruption of the ruling group there in Haiti that is sort of splashed into Montreal, where money from Haiti is being used to buy up some property. Kind of a telltale sign, you might say, of what sort of government it is. You call them, by the way, neo-Duvalists. Is that the term for this group, Jovenel Moïse group?
Yeah, I mean, Jovenel Moïse, like I said, he's from the political party of Tête Calée, which was set up by Michel Martelly, which is the individual that was made president by Washington and Ottawa back in 2010, 2011. And Michel Martelly was a member, this is self-identified, a member of the Tonton Macoutes when he was a teenager. This is somebody.
Tonton Macoute.
Yeah, this is not even like denied, right? This is admitted. He brought Jean-Claude Duvalier, who was in exile for, you know, from 86 to 2011. He brought Jean-Claude Duvalier back to Haiti. And, you know, when he was asked about Jean-Claude Duvalier returning, he's like, you know, the only people that want to see prosecution of Jean-Claude Duvalier are people in, you know, in North America, right? As if everyone in Haiti just loved Jean-Claude Duvalier. So this is not, it's not particularly hidden. The people around Martelly and Moïse are people who, you know, involved in all kinds of killing, all kinds of, you know, kidnapping, drug running, the corruption is just off the charts, right? And this is what the story, and this has been broken La Presse this week, of the one of the senators of the Tête Calée party buying up a mansion in Laval, a suburb of Montreal, for $4.25 million. And then it's come out now that $2 million more he's put into other property and other sort of business ventures that all come across as totally all paid in cash or all, you know, no, there's no mortgage for the property. This is part of the corruption. And now, so it's kind of implied in the stories that Canada has a hand in the corruption and, you know, allowing these officials to stash their cash in Canada. But that's only, you know, that's only a very small part of the Canadian contribution to this corruption. And this is where the story I go into in the story, which is that, you know, and this is, I'm getting this from Jean Seville, a prominent Haiti member of the Haitian community in Ottawa, activist and writer and, you know, a blogger and whatnot. He basically points out that, you know, imagine if Haiti and Jamaica and Ethiopia got together and said that we want to make Carla Homolka and Mom Boucher, who's the head of the bikers, or was the head of the bikers here in Montreal, we want to make them senators and the prime minister of Canada. I mean, that's the parallel with what Canada, the US and France have done in Haiti, which is we get the most regressive elements of Haitian society. And we say these people are, you know, the proper rulers, and these are the, and then, you know, whoa, what a surprise, they steal a bunch of money. Oh, what a surprise, they kill a bunch of people. And then, you know, obviously Canadian officials then wash their hands of the dirtier elements of it. But that's the, basically, you know, the political dynamic that we're involved with in Haiti. And yes, unequivocally, this is an effort to return the Duvalier dictatorship, right? That there's, you know, clear effort at completely excluding the vast majority of the population from political life, and doing that not, you know, by violence, by one of the acts, the decrees Moïse put out in November was labeling road blockades terrorism, right? As I mentioned, this new intelligence agency that's, you know, kind of in the direction of the Tonton Macoute. Rewriting the Constitution. This is all the, you know, the Duvalieres never left, right? That was the thing. I'm doing a book on the history of Canada's role in Haiti, and Canada backed Jean-Claude Duvalier, very clearly backed Jean-Claude Duvalier. Was not as influential as in Asian politics as they are today, but, you know, there were Canadian officials that that worked, you know, technocrats that worked, you know, Canadian International Development Agency officials that worked with Haitian officials. They even had a role in appointing one of Jean-Claude Duvalier's finance ministers in the early 1980s. And then after Jean-Claude, when he fled, the Royal Bank of Canada helped him get a whole bunch of his cash out of the country and get access to a bunch of his cash once Swiss banks even started clamping down on the money he'd stolen. But then in the period right after Jean-Claude leaves, Canada actually becomes quite a big pusher of trying to maintain what was called at the time Duvalierisme without Duvalier, right? Can maintain, you know, this brutal military regime without Duvalier, and became a really active agent in that process.
They wanted to get the name Duvalier but keep the Duvalier people.
Yeah, it was bad PR, right? Duvalier's name was bad PR, but you want this model, which is, and what's the model? The model is you have a whole bunch of impoverished people. You push them towards the cities where they are cheap labor to make Guild and Activewear t-shirts. And the Montreal-based apparel company, Guild and Activewear t-shirts. And that's the model. You know, there's 10 families, mostly light-skinned, that run Haiti's economy. They don't produce almost anything within Haiti, right? It's almost all importation of, you know, even rice, even foods. And the only thing they do, you know, even in the apparel sector, this is a crazy thing about the Haitian economy, even in the apparel sector, they don't even make the whole t-shirts in Haiti, right? They do the high labor intensive parts of the sweatshop, all right? Because the full t-shirt, it takes a bit more energy. Actually, energy is expensive in Haiti because everything's so dysfunctional. So you have the thrust of the t-shirt made in the Dominican Republic, and then the high labor, the labor intensive stitching part is actually done in Haiti. And this is you know, Canadian companies, American companies working through these 10 families that own the sweatshops that basically run the economy. And that's the sort of so-called you know, model of development that that Canada wants to see in Haiti.
Yeah. You know, Eva, I came in on this in some ways with the great hope and possibility of, in the person of Aristide, a former priest, who actually had a popular base and promised the people and wanted to deliver equity. And there was a little blip where he was permitted to run and won office. They seemed to have mass support. And they put us through a nightmare of coups where they would basically, things would get dangerous, and then either the Americans and the Canadians would literally bodily remove him, put him on a shelf for 3 or 4 years. I notice all these talks go on. Now we're in this zone where we talk about so-called opposition, but it's never put in terms of what's being offered to the people. In the case of the neo-Duvaliers, well, it's just business as usual with the U.S. hegemony. There's this dark area out there not mentioned, which was the original, that Aristide Revolution.
No, I mean, they did everything they can. If you look back on the claims, the rationale for like going after Aristide to overthrow him in 2004, the claims of like electoral question marks and this, like, these, compared to what's going on today, like, you have the Canadian government, Canadian media going on about Aristide's like apparent deficiencies in terms of electoralism. Compared to today, it's like, you know, it's comical. Right, it's completely comical, but you know, when there's a government that's trying to go in the direction of investing in education and domestic economy and you know, increasing the minimum wage and not just giving in to whatever the Canadian mining companies want, then that's a government that needs to be attacked, and they'll find the smallest of claims against them, and they'll blow them into this is a vile dictatorship.
I remember that he was accused of, the moment came when he said, I don't agree to accept an austerity program for Haiti. He said, I don't agree with the IMF diktat, because he wanted to protect the Haitian people. And it just went off like fireworks that he was undemocratic and a dictator and a monster.
Yeah, I mean, they wanted the main thing on that front, they want to privatize the last handful of state-owned companies. And Aristide resisted it. And the demonization was just off the charts. And the rationale for not privatizing was that if we privatize it, it's going to lead to the workers being fired and the production being brought in, turned into from imports, right? They're no longer going to have flour production in the country, and that's exactly what happened, right? But the 10 families that run the economy, they're basically in the import business, and they get product mostly from the U.S. And they do well by it. The vast majority of the people don't. The Canadian government, the Canadian government played a central role in the first coup against Aristide. It was a bit more passive Canadian involvement, but in the second coup in 2004 against Aristide, they actually planned the coup, at Meech Lake, just outside of Ottawa, on January 31st and February 1st of 2003. They decided that Aristide had to go. The Haitian military should be recreated. Haiti should be put under UN trusteeship. 13 months later, Aristide is forced out. The country was under 15-year UN occupation. And now the Haitian military has been recreated. And one of the only institutions in Haiti today that's coming out hard in defense of Jovenel Moïse is, lo and behold, it's the Haitian military that they have, these thugs that they've recreated. That was one of the big victories that Aristide had accomplished, was disbanding the Haitian military that was created during the U.S. occupation of 1915 to 1934. And it was only ever used to repress the domestic population. So that's the model that the Canadian government has been since Aristide was overthrown in 2004, has been the main thing it funds in Haiti is the policing system. We want to build up, it's gone on this mantra, there's not enough police. But increase the size of the Haitian police force. Well, we want to build up the repressive element of the Haitian state. We want to privatize the flour company or the telecommunications company, right? We want to privatize those things that we see companies can make some profits for, but we want to build up the repressive apparatus of the Haitian state.
Well, they call this a model, but it is a broken model from beginning to now, and yet they won't leave it. Their answer to everything is privatization. We've forgotten about Venezuela was helping Haiti, was going to provide cheap oil, and that just because of the intervention of the Western powers, that just went into the drink, and it actually ended up with a bunch of money stolen. It's a very embarrassing disaster. We're speaking to Eve Engler, but eveengler.com, and in the finally middle part here, I got to mention, on February 28th, Canadian Foreign Policy Institute has Haiti Betrayed. People just go to Canadian Foreign Policy Institute for the
foreignpolicy.ca.
Foreignpolicy.ca. And lastly, could you just tell us quickly, why do we have a damn core group, and where does their authority come from? How do they get away with dictating to the people of Haiti, this group?
Yeah, outside of Haiti, almost no one's heard of the core group, but in Haiti, you'll see graffiti all around, down with the core group. And basically the core group comes out of the Ottawa Initiative on Haiti, where the Chrétien government brought members of the Bush administration, the US minister of the French government, officials from the organization, American States, to discuss Haiti's future. No Haitian officials were invited. And so right up till today, you have the US, France, Canada, the OAS, UN, Spain, Brazil, that have this core group, and they're widely viewed as the real authority that's propping up Jovenel Moïse. But they come up with these sort of, these coalitions of imperial forces, and there's no legitimacy. Why isn't the Jamaican and the Ugandan and Venezuelan ambassadors have their, but that's not how, unfortunately, that's not how the world operates right now.
Yeah. Well, Eve, it's been very enlightening. Good luck with that conference, February 28th, eveengler.com. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.